Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
And welcome to the Imprint Companion, the companion podcast to Imprint Films. On this episode, we're going to be looking at the second half of the December 2023 batch from Imprint Films. This includes King of the Gypsies, Lenny, Islands in the Stream, and a humongous film focus box set, Marlon Brando Volume 1. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and don't you worry, dear listener, I am not the only voice you'll be hearing on this podcast. It will not be me screaming into the void about discs, Blu-rays, and the special features that go alongside the films on each of these movies. I instead will be held in companion with a dear friend of mine, Mr. Blake Howard. Mr. Blake Howard, how are you today?
Oh, Alexi, I'm brilliant, and I could listen to you scream into the void about discs and the special features on them every day. So I'm just so happy to be here. And I also am loving what we discovered last year, film-focused box sets from Imprint, which I can't wait to talk to you about because there's so many cool actors that are getting their just desserts on there. And yeah, I'm excited.
Oh, just desserts. I think there's a few main courses in this one, mate.
Yes. So, let's feast on the main course. Let's feast on the main course of this, which is film focus Marlon Brando. There's six amazing films in this box set: Sayonara, The Fugitive Kind, also directed by Sue Lumet, One Eyed Jacks, The Ugly American, Bedtime Story, and A Countess from Hong Kong. Lex, I saw two of the films in this box set in preparation for our discussion. So let's kick off with one of those. Maybe do you want to jump to the non-Lumet one? I know that you saw like three or four in this bad boy.
Yeah, I there was one that I caught up with again, and there's a few films I have seen before because my gateway into cinema was kind of Marlon Brando focused back in my teenage years. So I've seen a lot of these movies before, and there's a few in here that I'm really curious about that I'm nervous to watch. I've not been able to bring myself to watch a couple of these movies, but maybe it's a couple of years since I've last seen it. I'd love to hear your thoughts as a bridging episode, a bridge between our two episodes. We talked about the Sidney Lumet box set last week on the Imprint Companion. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Sidney Lumet's collaboration with Marlon Brando, The Fugitive Kind.
Come here. Oh, come here.
Dad.
Here. Come here. See that? There wasn't no bed in here when I came to work here.
It was there.
No, there wasn't no bed. It was no bed the day before yesterday. You put it there.
It was there. Folded behind the mirror.
Folded behind the mirror? No.
Yes.
No, no, no. You're lying. You're lying, and I see through you, lady. I see through you.
What do you see?
You like me to tell you?
I'd love for you to.
I see a not so young, not so satisfied woman who hires a guy in off the highway to do double duty without even giving him overtime for it. Being a store clerk by day and by night, you know. Whatever you want to call it. Who are you calling cheap? Who are you calling cheap?
Dad, why'd you come back? Why?
I put back the money I took so you wouldn't remember me as not being honest or grateful.
Yeah, look, it's a Tennessee Williams play adaption from his film Orpheus Descending. And you said something in our last episode on Sidney Lumet, which is that you can tell the because of his origins in teleplays and live theater on television, that you can almost tell he's almost got a shorthand as a filmmaker for the things that are plays. And The Fugitive Kind, if it wasn't for a kind of magnificent couple of performances from Marlon Brando and Joanne Woodward, this would be one of the least interesting Sidney Lumet directed movies that I think I've ever seen. It feels
really,
it feels its age at 1960. I don't know. I think their performances are absolutely magnetic. It's Tennessee Williams, so it's kind of like a sacred text when it comes to adaptions. I really enjoyed it. But I had, whereas some of the other films I found, there were moments and gateways into them that I really enjoyed as far as the cinematic storytelling. In this one, I felt it was the most that felt like a teleplay of the recent batch of Lumets. But, I mean, it's Marlon Brando. This is ultimately a box set that's about Marlon Brando's incredible work. And this is him in 1960. Maybe in the early peak of his career, like he was just redefining cinematic acting. So even when, you know, there's a grating, weird kind of like leaping out of the stereo sound voice coming from him as a judge from the background, Marlon Brando was just performing the house down. And so every single second that he's on screen, you're finding it more interesting to look at him. And I think that probably serves it with a like limited filmmaking. But yeah, it felt very closed. I don't know. That was my opinion of this in comparison to the other movie that I checked out in this box set, which is Brando directed. This felt very, kind of small and contained and a little bit claustrophobic. And I kind of wanted something else. We wanted something more from it, perhaps.
I think that's an interesting call. And I would say that, Brando and Tennessee Williams, it's a great pairing.
Good pairing.
And it's always worth watching for those two. It's been a few years since I've seen this, but I remember quite liking it. But your thoughts have made me want to rewatch it to kind of reconsider it. I think let's save the other one that we've both seen till last in this box set. I'm going to run you through the rest of these movies because they are all fascinating. I think these these focus box sets are kind of interesting because they're kind of a mixed bag.
Yes.
But to me, this Brando one is the most fascinating one because his career is so hard to pin down outside of the big hitters. And there are some fascinating things in here. I'll tell you what they are. Have you ever seen or heard of Bedtime Story?
Never.
I have seen Bedtime Story because it was remade a few times. Into Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So it is David Niven in the Michael Caine role, and it is Marlon Brando in the Steve Martin role. And I'll tell you this, it is direct remake. Scene for scene, remake these two movies. But Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a classic for a reason. Bedtime Story is not remembered for another reason. Marlon Brando is not quite funny enough to be in a broad comedy.
You can't
like
be
this.
Ruprecht if you're not
he's
funny.
He's doing Ruprecht. He pretty much does Ruprecht.
I am watching this fucking movie tonight. Oh my God.
It's not a favorite of mine. I remember Cameron and I did it on Total Reboot many years ago.
Oh my God.
Because we wanted to talk about The Hustle. We wanted to talk about
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
And of course, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But Bedtime Story, it's a weird one. I'm very
David
glad
David Niven
put
to
it in
Michael Caine
set.
Feels like it would make sense. David Niven's
yeah,
a funny
it makes
guy.
Sense. Yeah, it makes sense. He's funny. Michael Caine looks like David Niven in the remake. It's just a weird movie. Let me go back to my thoughts from it. Here's my letterbox entry from it back in the day. An argument against the age-old saying of comedy lives in the wide shot. No pace and no energy to gather laughs up. Brando is so weird here that I don't even think it's interesting.
Wow. Okay,
So that
cool.
is Bedtime Story, and I do
A
think you should
curio.
watch it.
I'm
It
going to
is
watch
an
it.
absolute curio. There's another movie in here that I've not seen. I don't know anything about. The Ugly American, a compassionate American ambassador to the strife-torn Southeast Asian nation of Sa Kan, is met with suspicion from the locals as he tries to keep the communists in the north from overrunning the weakened democracy in the south. This sounds like the prototypical forgotten Marlon Brando movie. He made a lot of movies
Oh, yeah.
that have similar premises to this. And even one of them was an imprint release.
It's called Burn or
Burn.
Kimara, which is excellent, which is actually an excellent movie because he was really phenomenal in it. Yes.
I will go back and I'll watch that one for sure.
Burn's good.
Sayonara is an interesting one. I tell you how I know about this and how I saw it. I saw this when I was maybe like 13 or 14 years old. I remember it seeing like some documentary of like an e-news documentary or whatever, like on like the
E-news.
entertainment channel or whatever. And it was about Red Buttons and how he won an Oscar for this movie, Sayonara. And I remember tracking it and watching it at 13 years old. And I don't know, it's okay. It's okay. I haven't watched it again yet, but I always found it interesting that Red Buttons was a comedian that did a serious movie and won an Oscar for it. And it's always been in my head for that.
How do you do and welcome? My name is Miko Taka. I have been asked to tell you about a motion picture called Sayonara. Sayonara was photographed on actual location in Japan. The word Sayonara means goodbye, and yet it means so much more, as you'll discover when you see this entirely different motion picture. It stars Marlon Brando, Patricia Owens, Red Buttons, Miyoshi Umeki, James Garner, Ricardo Montalban, and many others, including myself, Miko Taka. With your permission, I would like to present a few scenes from Sayonara.
It's basically an Air Force major who falls in love with a Japanese actress while stationed, finds herself having to contend with a cruel military policy and all but general bias against their interracial relationship. So it's kind of interesting. It's been in my head for a long time. I didn't get a chance to rewatch it, but I'll tell you the other one that I haven't seen. And I think it's like the curio that sells the box set, apart from the one we're saving at the end.
Oh my
It
God, I
is
just
a
started looking it
movie
up.
directed by one of the all-time greats, and it is the final film from this filmmaker. It's a movie called A Countess from Hong Kong, directed by Charlie Chaplin, starring Marlon Brando and Sophia Loren. I've read about this movie for a long
His
time,
only
and
film ever in color.
Of A Countess from Hong Kong was first announced, representatives of over 250 newspapers, magazines, wire services, TV and radio networks from virtually every country in the world crowded into the first press conference. Hundreds more covered the shooting. And the result? Typical are magazines like Life. Week and Continental Publications. A whirlwind of magazine covers, interviews, stories, of which the barest minimum is shown here.
I think that he's in it as well. He's in it. I don't, it's one that I've been very curious for a long time because
Oh
I
my
can't
God.
even imagine it. In Hong Kong, the ambassador returning to America meets a refugee Russian countess without a passport and decides to hide her in his cabin. Marlon Brando, Sophia Loren, Charlie Chaplin, to be a fly on the wall, that's all I can really say. And it, this is a disc loaded with features.
Yeah.
So I think it's the kind of thing that you would want from Imprint, which is a weird movie with a lot of context around it.
You know what? Bedtime Story counts from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
You had my curiosity. Now you absolutely have my fucking attention. Oh my God. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But let's get to the final film in this box set. It is a film that I've seen before, film that I absolutely love, a film that was a pleasure to catch up with once again. It is the lone directing credit from Marlon Brando, One-Eyed Jack. You'd seen this before as well, haven't you, Blake?
Yeah, I've seen it before too. I watched it many years ago. Went on several big Western kicks in my cinephile journey, and this one popped up as mainly a curio for me is that it was Marlon Brando's lone directing credit. And yeah, it's... I thought it was terrific back then when I watched it, and I like it even more now. I think I'm more ready for it. It's for vengeance and betrayal, and I love a father betraying a son in Westerns. There's so many Western morality tales where a father betrays a son or a son betrays a father, and there's a sort of like vengeance coming back. And
that's the thing about this movie that's so interesting, because they're not father and son. One of the characters' names is Dad.
No, but it's like. But it's that relationship. Yeah. Even though it's like that, I think it's so like
Freudian.
It that's exactly what it is. It's like literalizing a Freudian relationship where he calls him dad, but it's not. It's like a mentor betrayal. But yeah, that kind of like it's that play on it, and you're so spot on. That's what I probably like about it more is that it is like it actually literalizes the very Freudian thing. It's like, no, we're not just gonna say they're mentors. We're gonna kind of even confuse the shit out of everyone and call him dad. Mm-hmm. So that he has to call him dad.
His nickname is Dad. Yeah. People call him Dad in this movie. it's a really fascinating film. And it's always one of those ones where, like, you know, Brando was such an actor. And I hadn't seen this movie for probably like 15 years, maybe even longer.
Yeah.
I remember I had like I lived near in like the same block as an underground filmmaker. When I was a young kid getting into film, there were a few films that he gave me, and One-Eyed Jacks was one of them.
Really?
And it was like a crappy DVD, or may have even been a VHS back then. And I remember this movie, and I think, because I always think of Marlon Brando as like, he's an actor, and he never did another film. I always thought, well, he must have been not interested in being a director. But then going back to watching this, you go, oh my God, he's such a perfectionist. Like, this is such a beautifully told film. And the acting across the board is fantastic. You don't see performances like this, like his, in Westerns. You just don't see it. And of course, it's known that Stanley Kubrick was originally attached to this movie before Brando took over. And he wanted Spencer Tracy in the dad role. And he didn't do it. Brando had already cast Carl Malden because they were buddies, and he wanted to make a movie with Carl Malden. And I think that Brando's like, he's striving for that kind of authenticity that he does in his method way that you just don't see it in Westerns. But beyond that, dare I say, this is one of the best looking Westerns
looks
ever
made. Amazing. Looks amazing.
And it is the rarest example. In fact, it's the only one that comes to mind, and I was thinking about it all day long. The only ocean beach Western.
Yeah, like the only one that you could even remotely classify as what is now called a neo-Western is like, there is a beach scene and there will be blood. Like it's about it. There's not very, there's no beach westerns. No, you're spot on.
And you see so much of like this kind of sweeping ocean. Like it's such a backdrop for a lot of this movie. And a lot of the soulfulness is kind of connected to the ocean in this movie, I think. The poetics of it all.
Mm.
It's very, just, I think that this is a fantastic film. It's a flawed film for sure. It's a flawed film. But it's all the more interesting for it. I really love One Eyed Jacks. And I think it is... This is a really great release. I think I also own the Criterion for this, but this has more special features, more going for it. And I think it even has a newer scan. So someone out there in the world is going to be getting a Criterion Christmas present from me.
It is from a 4K, like the brand new 4K scan, this Blu-ray. And it does look sensational. Like even though it's not a 4K disc, it looks fantastic. And what I would say is also, I just want to touch on what you were talking about with like the performances is like Westerns characteristically, especially at this time, they're like big characters, like the morality plays, there are big personalities. It's about being big. It's about big horses and big mustaches and big hats and big performances. And so to see everyone completely downplay and like Brando be so fastidious around everyone just having these idiosyncrasies and being low, like on this same low frequency, very good. And yeah, definitely flawed, not a like, maybe not like canonically one of the great Westerns of all time, but just because it's fascinating, that's what makes it everything. There's a new doco on here, which I didn't get a chance to watch yet, which is the making of the film with interviews and film historian Courtney C. Joyner, Henry Park, the producer, director, Michael Priest, and a Western film historian, Mike Malloy, and Western historian, Rob Word, that I didn't get to see, which is like an authentic death. And it's saying pursuing One-Eyed Jacks, which I'm really, really keen to see. And so, yeah, I'm excited to check this out on this disc. Has a great other ones as well. Mike Siegel on the making of the film and some other things there. So I'm keen to check it out.
Absolutely. I mean, it's to me, this is the one that sells the box. Like it's a very great film. If you want the curiosities, they're all in there. Bedtime Story, Counts from Hong Kong, Sayonara, Fugitive Kind, The Ugly American. The curiosities are in there. But I think like a problem, let me cut, I don't want to say problem.
Yeah.
But I think like a lot of these film focus, like actor focus box sets, it's a lot of like the interesting offcuts or B-sides or like, you know, less iconic movies by some iconic actors. This is the one where I'm like, this is one of the best Marlon Brando projects is One-Eyed Jacks.
Yeah. And I think also the balance, like, and I say this sort of selfishly, but it was a smaller set. The Jennifer Connelly box set had a couple of really interesting performances in it, but it was only three films long. So it's like hard to like say like what is the best. It's got like some things that are popular, some things that are critically acclaimed, etc. With Brando, because his career is so massive, like you've got a Brando Tennessee Williams. If you can't have Streetcar, you've got Fugitive Kind. So you've got his only directorial effort. You've got these amazing other curios that are in there. So it's like it does seem to lead off with these big movies in here, which make it a kind of essential buy. And then the curios are even more interesting. So I'm so actually disappointed in myself that I didn't notice that Bedtime Story was remade into Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and vice versa. Cause I've seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels about 100,000 times and a Countess from Hong Kong, no clue that it was a Chaplin movie. So I am.
It's crazy.
Color me completely shocked and excited to revisit those along the way. Lex, I'm going to lead you off. We're going to go from a fantastic film focus box set on Brando to one of two of the final films here. But I just want to quickly lead you off because you have seen one of these films in this upcoming set that I haven't. So can you tell the listeners about that one first? And then I want to lead you into the final film we'll do of the day.
For thousands of years, they have lived as strangers among us, knowing us better than we know ourselves, believing in a God-given right to roam the world as if they owned it.
Where's my diamond?
I don't know. It's another gypsy mystery.
Though they fight among themselves, together they stand against the world. And the only law the word of one man.
Jarko Stepanovich, King of the Gypsies. Amen.
King of the Gypsies. A heritage passed from one generation to the next.
You don't have to have $1 million to live like a millionaire, don't you understand, you see?
From the moment of his birth, he is marked for greatness.
You're a smart kid. Your old man is a fool. I know that.
I'll give you a lesson you can use in your life, man. Get in here. Drive. Smooth. You gotta go smooth.
Hey, Dave. What are you running away for? Come back, boy. Come back.
Somebody's got to take care of everybody.
Not me, though.
You owe.
Davey, he's going to give the ring and the medallion to you.
He was born to be a king.
You're special. I bet you could wrestle the devil for his hat.
No, you're me.
To fight. And to love.
All my promises you can't keep. You'll break my heart.
We live in a democracy. There are no kings.
I just came here to make sure that the man is dead.
He made you king?
I destroy my bad luck. I bury my bad luck. I break my bad luck. Break it. Break it.
I want you to go tell the old man to take his ring and his medallion and give it to anybody with respect for what you are.
His name is David, and now his time has come.
Fire.
King of the Gypsies.
You're my strength. You're my hope. I want you home.
Yes, I had a chance to watch The King of the Gypsies from Frank Pearson. In the criminal and violent world of modern-day gypsies based in New York City, their king, Jarko Stepanović, passes his leadership to his unwilling grandson, leaving the skipped father resentful. I had a very good time with this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a really wonderful score, great music composed by David Grisman. It's a lot of like that kind of early 20th century kind of like gypsy style folk music, a lot of that. So a lot of like great fiddles, lots of great instrumentation. But what makes this film unique for me and interesting for me, it is the acting debut of one Eric Roberts,
an actor
I very much love because he's an interesting, really interesting presence.
He's a weird unit.
Young in this movie. He's a very weird unit. and I think that this is an interesting film. It's based on a book that I'd heard about before, but it's like a New York crime film that has an epic scope. So you can't help but compare it to The Godfather, and nothing comes across well when you do that. but this one is interesting. Like I said in the plot description, it is about the King of the Gypsies, who is like a man of power, played by Sterling Hayden, also from The Godfather.
Also from The Godfather.
And there's another actor from The Godfather in here, Michael Vigazzo, who is basically his rival in their early days together. But when Sterling Hayden's character passes on, he gives the power to the King of the Gypsies. He bestows it upon his grandson, Eric Roberts, who had also, he's disavowed. He wanted to have a different future than his culture could permit him to have. And his father, played by Judd Hirsch, wonderful actor, great wow. Judd Hirsch performance. Their dynamic is interesting because Judd Hirsch is like, you know, he should be the next in line, but he kind of gets skipped over, and it causes an incredible amount of conflict. Judd Hirsch's character tries to have his son killed.
Whoa.
And that's like that's kind of deep into the movie, but I think that is like the selling point. Like that's to me something that's so interesting about like this kind of the dynamic that's happening in this film. And there's so much more that happens after, beyond that. But I'll tell you this, who plays Eric Roberts' mother in this film? Very young Susan Sarandon.
What?
Yeah, Susan Sarandon, she's great in this. And also Brooke Shields plays his younger sister as well. So it's a really great cast. And in particular, I'd say Eric Roberts is fantastic. Judd Hirsch is fantastic. I really love the performance by Susan Sarandon as well. It's great. And I'd say there is one special feature on here that I really, really like. There's a great one with an editor of the film, Paul Hirsch, but also Trailers from Hell, Michael Schlesinger commentary on King of the Gypsies.
Oh my
He's
God.
A big fan of this film.
Really?
And he said that he met Paul, he met Frank Pearson a few times, and he was just going like, yeah, I love King of the Gypsies. Like, you're the only one that loves it, man. And he got him to sign a rare lobby card for the film. So it's a really great anecdote, lovely little special feature of King of the Gypsies, Trailers from Hell. I love Trailers from Hell. This is a really good one. But this is an interesting movie. I think you would like it, Blake. You would like it a lot.
I'm in on that one. That sounds fantastic. I just didn't get a chance. As we said in the first episode of this December batch, our cuppeths overfloweth at the end of the year. And so this is why we're coming to you close to Feb, recapping on everything December. Let's quickly dive to the final one. It's a Bob Fosse movie. It stars Dustin Hoffman. Bob Fosse, that's a person that you need to be complete on their entire filmography.
It's only like four movies, so it's not too hard.
If this is one that you're missing out on from one of the great movie years of all time, it's 1974's Lenny.
Lenny Bruce.
How do you people really feel about doing it? Isn't that about dirtiest thing we could do to each other?
He was a comic,
a cynic,
a satirist,
a criminal,
a genius.
You don't have to applaud. Really, it's really weird. It's enough that you're just listening. You know, it's so strange. I used to get fired for doing this. And like, now I'm getting a following, right?
He was called funny,
filthy,
honest,
obscene,
brilliant,
sick.
Work clean, Lenny. Don't resort to using dirt.
Time magazine called him the sickest of them all.
Everybody's going to be warned about you. You're finished. Finished in show business.
Oh, no, not that.
The New York Post called him a kind of prophet.
No, man, I'm just a comic.
You certainly have a great deal of social impact.
Ed Sullivan described him as dynamic and original.
We all want for a wife a combination Sunday school teacher and $500 a night hooker.
Hot, honey, holla! Let's hear everybody!
Dorothy Kilgallen said he was a brilliant, moral man.
Don't you want to tell me about the Chinese chick in the club? You didn't know I knew that, did you?
I don't want to play this stupid game!
Playboy called him the most controversial comic of our generation.
I am totally corrupt. I mean, really?
The Manhattan District Attorney said his act was an anthology of filth.
Wow. Have you ever seen so much blue in all your life? I seem to be under a little pressure here tonight to cool my act.
He was arrested numerous times for obscenity.
Man, what is that?
Makes you think you've got the right to say a word like that in a public place.
I didn't do it, man. I just said it.
I'm ready to find you guilty right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man's under arrest.
What, again? Oh, what the...
Mr. Bruce, you are making this very difficult.
The point I'm trying to make is that we all live in a very hypocritical
Mr. Bruce,
society.
You leave me no alternative but to find you in contempt of this court.
Please, don't take away my words.
Newsweek described his cause of death as an overdose of police. His obituary in Time magazine said he viewed life as a four-letter word. Dustin Hoffman, Lenny. A Bob Fosse film.
All right. Lenny is the story of the acerbic 1960s comic Lenny Bruce, whose groundbreaking, no-holds-barred style and social commentary was often deemed by an establishment as too obscene for the public. This is every Bob Fosse movie is an autobiography in some way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautifully put.
And it feels like his entire career is about this kind of like like both external and self-persecution. And so this feels like a great subject for him in Lenny Bruce. It's stars Dustin Hoffman, who does a terrific performance in this. And it's a famous movie, I guess, you know, Lex, you're actually a comedian. So I should ask you, firstly, tell us a little bit about Lenny Bruce and then tell me about Hoffman's performance as Lenny Bruce, because I've heard many things, many comedians just in passing. You listen to comedy podcasts, people go, they talk about comedy movies. They're like, oh, who was good? What movie was good? And people always talk about this movie. There are lots of opinions. Not all of them are great, but can you tell me about A, Lenny Bruce for the listeners, and B, what you think of Dustin Hoffman?
I love this movie, firstly. I love Dustin Hoffman's performance as Lenny Bruce. I'm a big Bob Fosse fan, and this was the first Bob Fosse film I saw back in the day. I bought this DVD from like a garage sale when I was like 15 years old. I don't even know how.
I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Because your peak, like, you and I talk about peak video store era, but like all that jazz feels like a movie that everyone has at home on DVD, even if they don't even own a DVD player anymore. So like, it shocks me that like Lenny was the one.
Lenny was the one. I don't even really know why. I think I was a Dustin Hoffman guy and I saw it at a garage sale. I'm coming to get that.
Fair enough.
And obviously I was interested in comedy growing up, and Lenny Bruce is, he's a maverick comedian, extremely important to the history of comedy and censorship and comedy's relationship to censorship. He's hard to find stuff from him. Like, so that's why Lenny's kind of an essential movie, because you're like, okay, it's a great way to see and experience Lenny Bruce.
Literally until like the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Not many people had even encountered much of the persona of Lenny Bruce, like
for a long
decades, yeah.
And there's a character in Mad Men that's also kind of based on Lenny Bruce and stuff like that. And also, you know, all that jazz is about the making of this movie, which is so interesting. Like, you see him editing a version of Lenny with another actor playing Lenny. And I will say this, important comedian, he must be one of the worst. Like, I think, like, he is worse than Rupert Pupkin, I would say, Lenny Bruce. I culturally, I understand that's important, but I've never been able to understand why. Like, because I'm like, I can't imagine you watching this laughing when you're in the 1960s or whatever. You laughing hearing this shit, or is just going like, oh, interesting, someone's saying something that's interesting. So. You know, I don't even know if it's controversial.
The Vox spot from Lenny Bruce, someone going, oh, someone's saying something interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah. Great review.
Yeah, it's like,
great
review. I don't know, man. It's just like, obviously it's not my bag. It's aged not so well. My friend Josh Earle has always said this thing that I've loved. I don't know if it's from him originally, but he's who I heard it from. That comedy ages like fruit and not wine.
Yeah,
and I think
it really
that
does.
Lenny Bruce, it's like, to me, it's not even comedy. I'm like, what is that? It's like bee poetry or something. Having said that, Dustin Hoffman's amazing in this movie. I think it's a very good movie. And this disc is loaded with some really interesting things in here, especially the editing of the film, I think, is very interesting. There's an interview with the editor, Alan Hine, which I cannot wait to watch. It's not on this disc, and it's never been included in anything, because there was it's a special feature that was made for the Criterion release of All That Jazz by Matt Zola Sites, but it wasn't on there. It's not on this either, but it's called Fosse Time. It's about the editing of Bob Fosse's movies, and it used to be on like Vimeo, but I think it's gone now. I know your friends with Matt Zola Sites. Can you ask him if he's got it and can send it to me? I'd love to see it again.
I am friends with Matt Zolzites, and I will ask next time and say, what happened to this? Why did it go away?
Yeah, for some reason, it didn't make the release of the Criterion of All That Jazz. But seeing this have like a special feature also called Fosse Time, it's made me want to revisit that, but it's impossible to find. Yeah, this is interesting. You had a chance to catch up with this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So it was actually perfect timing, because we love a secondhand DVD at a garage sale, as you said, with Lenny. I picked up the book Fosse after reading Sam Wasson's terrific novel, The Big Goodbye, which is all about sort of Chinatown, the making of Chinatown in New Hollywood and the entire making of that movie. He's actually just done a recent Francis Ford Coppola book called The Path to Paradise. But he had a book on Fosse many years ago, back in 2013. I picked it up at a garage sale and I was reading it. And so when I saw that Lenny was coming out, I'd been doing a Fosse revisit and I was going to just buy Lenny on iTunes or something like that, because that's the only way that I've been able to find it. But I checked it out again. And yeah, I mean, you're so right. There is actually all that jazz. There are flashes of Lenny in it about him making the movie. And I just can't. Sam Wasson's book so beautifully framed that, like, that whole thing of that quandary of Bob Fosse, of like everything is about his kind of self or external persecution to his character, to his lifestyle, to his creative process, to his everything, which is why I think Roy Scheider's performance in All That Jazz is maybe one of the 10 best performances ever. It's so unbelievable and just incredible. And Lenny's terrific. I think Hoffman's good. I think his performance as a comedian, I'm not a comedian, so I can't say whether I think it's good as a comedian, like whether he could actually stand up in front of the crowds and make it funny. But you're so right. Like, he's using age old material in a crowd of actors and he's not going to be funny, but his performance as the guy, the tortured soul, I think is really terrific. And he's doing some of his best work in this part of the 70s. So like, it's definitely, it's not like a dip. It's not like a flaw performance. It's just probably a smaller movie, but I said, you know, Bob Fosse, there's like four movies, as you said, you have to see them all. And this is incredible. Mm-hmm. And if you've never seen it, check it out. And it's definitely worth your investment for much less than like some of our bigger things we've been discussing. We're talking about these huge box sets. And if you can't afford it, it's totally understandable. And, you know, wait for a sale to see if you can get 50% off on one of those big boxes. But Lenny, it's going to be cheap for you to pick up. So if you've never seen it before, definitely worth your investment.
Yeah, and there's a special feature on here that I really want to see, which is just a documentary about Lenny Bruce. It's like a half-hour doco called Dead Neon, The Many Faces of Lenny Bruce on Film. Yeah, very curious to dive into it. Lenny is a very, very good movie. Very, very good movie.
Yeah, big recommend.
It's been a great, it's a mammoth month, a mammoth month. We didn't even get a chance to get into everything. We made a heck of a dent into it all. I do think it's batch-worthy. I do think if you can get a big old discount on the batch, the Lumet box set, The Pawnbroker is one of the best films I've ever seen in my whole freaking life. Serpico is a long time one of my favorite films. One-Eyed Jack's, great film. If you're only going to get one box set, you have to go to Lumet box set.
You have to go to Lumet. But Lex, as we've just discussed in this episode, that Brando Film Focus might be the best balanced Film Focus box we've ever seen. It's got the Tennessee Williams Brando. It's got his directorial debut and only film, One-Eyed Jacks, a classic, a Western classic, a flawed classic. And it has Bedtime Story with him playing Prince Ruprecht. And it has a Chaplin movie. Like, this is Imprint 101. Like, it's got the big stuff and it's got the weird curios. And it's like, almost, how could you resist? How could you resist?
I don't know, man. It's tough because it's like, for these ones, you're like, oh, I wish you could just break the box set up.
Yeah,
you want One-Eyed Jacks. He doesn't want One-Eyed Jacks. But then everything in there, it's a weird box set. You will have an interesting time with it. So
but also,
still give it a big wreck.
I would just say to everyone, check it out. Check Imprint out, because there are definitely some big Imprint releases that are getting lovely little single disc rerun. So check out if there's some other things that you're checking out. Anything that's hugely popular, they want to do that. I want to quickly talk to you, mate, because just before we wrap up, the February batch has already been announced. The films are Face to Face from Ingmar Bergman, The Dresser from 1983, Mountains to the Moon, A Man in Love, I'm Not Scared, and Children of Heaven. That one is coming out. We will cover that much later. So there's Golden Globe and award winners there. There's, Ingmar Bergman. There's Palme d'Or winners. There's first on Blu-ray of all time and Iranian films. I think it may be the first Iranian film from 1997, which got Best Foreign Language Film at the Academy Awards. So I'm very excited to go through and unpack those. So there's another massive batch, but we'll be on top of that one. So But was there anything else that you wanted to shout out, Lex? Imprint related, any other disc related before we jump into some plugs and get out of here for this month?
Yes, there is something in the March bundle from Imprint Films that it's been on my list for my whole life. I've never had a chance to watch it. It's a little movie called Batteries Not Included. That's a movie that I've never had. I just don't know why I've never seen it. It's been maybe hard to find, but it's that kind of like Amblin-esque, like it's, I mean, it is Amblin. It's executive producer Steven Spielberg. I have always wanted to see it. It's Brad Bird co-wrote the screenplay. Mm-hmm. It's just that kind of stuff that every now and then
you're a huge Hume Cronin guy. Huge Hume Cronin.
Oh, I've always said that. I've always said I love Hume Cronin. Do you know, weirdly, I did rewatch Cocoon the other day that does feature
I watched the Pelican Brief the other day and it has Hume Cronin.
Yeah, I had a great time rewatching Cocoon.
Look at that.
Good look shit, man. Good shit. Well, so look, what about you? Anything you're really interested in?
Look, I'm in the March batch. I've tried to stay away from March. I'm trying to keep us on track to like just get through February because I just know, and we sometimes have a skinny about some things that are coming up on Imprint that others don't get to know yet, and we're excited about it. So I'm like, I'm just going to motor through February and actually smash through that whole batch to get us into a good place for future Imprint companions. So I'm not looking at March yet, but I am now chuckling at, okay, cool. We've got some Green Ice, which I've never heard of before. A Ryan O'Neill film. I'm like, oh, a Sharon Stone movie. Cold Steel looks like a kind of like a neo-noir. Oh, I'm interested in there. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple in there, but I'm trying to stay away, Lex. I need to do February 1st and then we can move on to March. I can't do both right now.
Hey, there's one thing that you mentioned that I think I might give a little shout out to. The Imprint reprints, the non-special editions that they release much later. I've just had a look and Drugstore Cowboy Standard Edition is out.
Yep.
Really loved that. I loved Black Sunday, which now has a standard edition. That was one that was like right up both your and my alley with
movie.
Bruce Dern and Robert Shaw.
Directed by Conquest. John Frankenheimer, baby.
Mr. Frankenheimer, of course. The director of Reindeer Games and many other great films. And also Dare the Locust from John Schlesinger is now a standard release. All worth your time. Oh, Conquest of Space. I really like that too. Kind of like B space, interesting, fun, beautiful
and one last,
looking movie.
One last one. The Gambler with Jimmy Kahn is getting its own standalone release. So if you missed that bad boy, get your hands on that. Only $24 on their website right now. That's like the best $24 you've ever spent.
Absolutely. Well, Blake, what have you got cooking up? You've got Midnight Run Through, I understand.
Yeah, Midnight Run Through, great 12-part miniseries, collaboration with my friend Jen Johans from Watch with Jen. You can listen to that show on One Hit Minute Productions feed or on the Watch with Jen feed. We'll just put it over both for 12 weeks. That'll go up. And immediately following that, a brand new miniseries, Too Many Minutes, a sneakers podcast. We're hopefully going to have an amazing show for you with some incredible guests. Phil Alden Robinson is one of them. We've already spoken to Stephen Tobolowsky for another show, so there'll be a little bit of Stephen Tobolowsky on there. I'm hoping to get a friend of 1 8 Minute Productions, Donal Logue, back, who Ooh, plays the baby. Scientist who invents the microchip in that movie, to come on and talk to me a little bit about that. Some other amazing guests that I'm really looking forward to sharing with along the way, including a guest who's only ever been on one other podcast ever and is one of the most sought after film minds in the game. And I'm a huge fan of hers and she's amazing. And I will give you just a tease, just say hers and be very excited for her to join us on that show as well.
Whoa, okay, interesting.
Yeah, so very excited. What about you, my friend? What are you cooking up over there?
Sunburnt Screens, I'd love you to listen to it. It's my basically introductory podcast into Australian cinema, something to entice you to go a little bit deeper. I'm very proud of it. It's an audio kind of documentary experience. We look at Australian horror films in the 21st century. We look at Australian queer cinema. We look at Ozploitation with the master, Brian Trenchard-Smith.
Oh, BTS,
and
baby.
We also go into some great auteurs. Gillian Armstrong, upcoming episode. Rolf Dahir, upcoming episode. And a couple more that I'm working on at the moment that Blake is privy to, which he might even appear on if we can get it to happen. Very excited if we can get it to happen.
Very excited too. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the second in this latest batch of Imprint Companions. You can find us in our own feed of Imprint Companion. Otherwise, you could be listening on the 1-8-Meter Productions feed. Just keep subscribing here. You'll see them pop up when they pop up, as well as other physical media stuff that we do. Thanks to Imprint Films for always looking after Lex and I. We are such huge fans of everything they do. And this has been like the most Imprint of Imprint Films batches of all time, filled with great unheralded classics and curios and everything. So it's been awesome. We're looking forward to everything they're going to be doing this year, including Imprint Asia, Lex. Oh my God, another bunch of stuff that we're going to be covering. Super exciting, but we can't wait to catch up with you guys soon. So keep listening. And if you ever want to hit us up, One Blake Minute on all the socials. This is Alexi on all the socials for Lex, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Enjoy.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.